This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Mind Muscle Project, welcome back to this week's after show. Yes, yes, it's true. I'm still in lockdown. But I am joined by... How many people live in Victoria? Is it 7, 8 million?
Good question.
I think it's 8 million.
It's
7 million, 8 million? Mm. Anyway.
And what, 6.9 of them have coronavirus?
Yeah, a lot. Well, it's concerning because obviously if you're following the news internationally out in Australia or you're in Melbourne, you know about this obviously firsthand. They went into the fourth stage of lockdown, but it doesn't seem like people are actually following the rules. So they have like a curfew and stuff now and they're not really supposed to go out for anything except like essential goods, like farm.
I also noticed straight away, I was like, this must be the first time in history that the government has mandated how many exercise sessions you can do in a day. It like specifically for the junkies out there, it's like 1 hour of exercise outside a day, once per day.
Oh, wow.
Because straight away, I was like, oh, perfect, triple days. Ruled that shit out. Yeah.
You know, it's been pretty nice. I would say like since I announced it publicly that I was in lockdown, people have actually reached out to see if I'm okay. And I'm fine. Like, I'm honestly, it's no different for me. I mean, look,
that's what everyone says when they're not okay.
It's true, bro. Help me. No, I mean, I got stuff to do, right? I was saying, you know, I'm fortunate enough to, the businesses are busy and obviously they're open. So there's work to do and work to be done. And so I have stuff to do every day, but I can really sympathize with people that, you know, don't have a job, don't have something to do and are forced into lockdown. I mean, really, it's the boredom that kills you.
Yeah.
If you have nothing to do, nothing to keep yourself busy, then that's what really crushes you. But I'll tell you what, I've been enjoying, really, really enjoying. So I've been doing, obviously a lot of different strategies to talk about. I've been doing an isolation, been experimenting with. But one thing I've been enjoying a lot is to ramp myself up for training. I haven't done this, probably since I started lifting weights. Remember when you started lifting weights, you used to watch like Ronnie Coleman motivation videos, Dorian Yates motivational videos to like...
What? You think I've stopped?
Okay, I stopped. To like jack yourself up to train. But
yeah, dude, of course.
This is what I do. I go on and I type in greatest sporting comebacks of all time, right? And there's like these hour-long montages of just all these crazy sporting comebacks. And one of them that got me particularly fired up was the Tiger Woods comeback. Dude, I did not realize. So in 2019... he won the Masters Cup or whatever it is. And it's like, I don't know, it's crazy because, you know, it was like 11 years since he last won that trophy. And he had like, it wasn't just the scandals and the controversy with his off the course life, if you want to put it that way. You know, the drink driving and that sort of shit. But it was, his whole spine is like fused. It's like destroyed. And he made statements himself that were like, I don't know if I'll ever play golf again. And the best part is when they have the montage of all the different sporting commentators who are like, you know what? Tiger should retire. If it's a difference between Tiger coming back and Tiger retiring, he should retire. And like everyone counts him out. And then he's just, and you just see him just go, you know what? I just didn't quit. And he makes that, I don't know, something about golf, man. When they make that final putt to win and the crowd just goes fucking nuts. It's so emotional. Like I get so jacked up. And so anyway, I ended up...
And then you go and do a handstand. a poor quality handstand.
No, this is... I was training legs. So, I ended up doing like these massive sets where it was supposed to be like 12 reps. I ended up going like to 30 reps or some shit. I was so sore the next day. But anyway, that has been my new strategy to jack myself up because I'm right in front of my TV. So, I can just like have them playing the whole time. Whereas in a normal gym situation, can't really walk around because you kind of want to watch it at the same time. But you can't really watch your phone when you... placing it down on the floor while you're trying to do a set of squats. You can't really see it, right? But because it's so big and I got the dumbbells right in front of my TV, I'm like in the moment and I've got the TV on like super loud and stuff. It's hectic. It's my new strategy. Sporting comebacks. It's like an hour-long video. I've just been watching it nonstop. It's amazing.
No, it is good. I've done that before. I've definitely sat on the bike beforehand, put the video on the phone and watched it to get started. Yeah.
No, it's mad. It just brings up that level of like emotion, right? And that's like kind of kicks you on the ass. So, a few other things I've been doing. Actually, we'll get into that Andrew Huberman podcast. But one of the things that obviously drops dramatically is just steps. I dropped my steps one day, it was like 450. It's like, it was so depressing. Anyway, so I started thinking about different strategies for stepping. So I've done running on the spot. So I'll like run on the spot. Mm. I'll try and do like 1,000 steps running on the spot, which actually is surprisingly fast and quick, and it jacks your heart rate up. But the best strategy really has been is just to do small workouts throughout the day. Walking around an apartment in circles is retarded. It's actually stupid. Mm. It's not very productive. It's much better to do like 3 or 4 really small workouts. Like, all right, I'm going to stand up and do like 100 band pull-aparts and 20 air squats or something every time I break. It's like really basic workout, and it's just a better strategy. And you just kind of have to accept, okay, I'm just not going to get the metric of steps in for this context right now. And so I need to pick something else to keep my body moving. So I'm just doing random stuff like that. That seems to be helping. The other thing I've been doing as well to keep my immune system up is cold showers, which I almost never do because I don't shower usually in the morning. I just get changed and go off. It's not part of my routine. But I've been choosing to do cold showers to boost immunity. And yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I'll tell you what though, I tried the ice cold shower into nothing, like just dry off and get on with your day. And then ice cold shower followed up by heat, like hot shower. It's much better because what I realized is when you go ice cold shower in the morning, it takes all day to warm up. All day. Like you basically cold all day and it's just not fun shivering all day. And I think that's probably worse for your immune system, like never warming all the way back up. But you know, those have been some of my different strategies to keep me occupied and keep me moving.
They've done studies to show that increases white blood cells in the body.
Yep.
And there's quite a few. Oh fuck, there's actually a lot of studies on this here. I'm looking at.
While you're looking at it,
pretty surprising. And
the other thing I was thinking as well is, you know, we get asked sometimes what's the best piece of monostructural equipment. In the context of a home gym, a treadmill is the winner. I'm telling you, treadmill is honestly the winner in lockdown. Not being able to go outside, stepping is just better than biking and skiing and rowing. It's more natural movement, and it's just something that, yeah, you can just do so easily. You can just watch TV and step. You can't really watch TV that well and, like, I don't know, do ski erg and, like, bike necessarily because, I don't know, it's just more awkward, you know? You want to focus. I guess you could bike a bit more. It's probably a bit easier, but, I don't know, just going for, like, a cruisy bike, you just get really pumped up quads, like, no upper body work, and you just get a sore ass from sitting on the seat, whereas walking is natural. Like, your whole body is moving. It's like, moving. You can mix in some running. Yeah, if I was purchasing any piece of monostructural equipment in lockdown, I would be getting a treadmill for sure.
Yeah, unfortunately, no one's selling them because they are crazy sold out. Okay, I'm going to round this out. 2015, they did a study. 3,000 people did hot, cold showers for like 30, 60 or 90 seconds. And there was a statistical reduction in self-reported sickness.
Interesting.
In the people that did the cold showers. And they had like a placebo and control group and that stuff.
People that did the cold showers. Yeah.
Yeah, they had like it was a proper study, like they had control groups and stuff like that. So seems like there is something to it. They're not really sure on the mechanism of how it's working. There's a few different theories, but seems like it at least in the studies it works.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus with cold therapy is the mechanisms are a little bit unknown still.
Yeah.
But yeah. Definitely there's been widely reported benefits for sure. Yeah. Okay, so I want to get into this Andrew Huberman podcast. Probably one of the best Joe Rogan podcasts, or at least the most informative Joe Rogan podcast I listened to for a while. If you happen to stumble across his recent one with Post Malone, expecting them to talk about something interesting, and instead you got your ears washed out with 3 hours of conspiracy theories and alien talk, then go listen to Andrew Huberman. It'll make you feel a lot better about yourself having wasted so much time listening to Post Malone. So Huberman is he's a neurobiologist and a brain researcher at Stanford University. He runs one of the labs there, and I think he's like a professor or head professor there. Anyway, so a lot of his research is on basically how the brain works, how it's connected to the body, the nervous system, breath work, how the whole system works. But in particular, I think he's focused a lot on learning and how we learn and how kind of plastic the brain is and how we can change our behaviors. And I got some really interesting stuff out of it. But Raph, I'll let you go first. What was like maybe one of the biggest takeaways you got?
Yeah, the one I wanted to talk about was, did you catch the bit on hypnotism?
Yes.
So that was one that I would have been 100% against not that long ago, but I had an experience where I got hypnotized myself, and they got into a bit of the science and stuff on how it works, and now I'm a huge believer in it, because the person that hypnotized me has hypnotized a couple of people at the gym for smoking, and they haven't smoked since, and it's been like, I think like 6 months for one, and yeah, like well over a year for the other, and they'd both been smoking for years, and like at least a pack a day, so it works 100%. I encourage anyone that hasn't been hypnotized to go do it. The thing I thought was interesting was that it seems like there's a big genetic difference in how much people actually do get hypnotized. Like people that are like, oh, it doesn't work. It just might not work for you because you like your genetic makeup makes you less able to get hypnotized by people. Mm. But the next step I want to go to this, because it's not very affordable to get hypnotized often.
How much?
I want to try and find YouTube.
How much did it cost to get hypnotized?
It was like $250. Oh, wow. But like, I'm not going to do it every week, but it's not surprising, right? Because, you know, it takes like 45 minutes.
Right. Yeah. It's a long
process. Of their time to hypnotize you. Yeah. So you're not going to get it for $10 and someone needs to be trained.
So what did you do? Did you like lie down and like take deep breaths? And
the way I was hypnotized is like sit down. So you kind of relax. And then they just like, he was just like relaxing and relaxing me, like to the point where you're like insane relaxed.
Eyes closed.
And it's exactly. Sorry?
Eyes closed.
Yeah. Eyes closed. It's exactly as they describe. You hit a like exact halfway point between being awake and being asleep. And you're like, you're right in the middle. Like you can hear what the person's saying, but you're not really awake. And my experience was, I'm not sure if I talked about it on the show before, but my experience was at the end when it finished, he was like, open your eyes. I couldn't open my eyes. Like I did the action for opening my eyes and my eyelids like wouldn't move. It literally felt like they were stapled together. And then I was like instant freak out. I tried again, didn't open. And then like the third or fourth time, it's probably took like 2 seconds, my eyelids opened. Mm. And he was saying, it's just like, if you relax yourself so much, you can like lose control of some muscles.
Wow.
So
when you were in the hypnotized state, what like you had an intention going into it? Like obviously you're not a smoker, so it wasn't trying to get you to quit smoking, but.
No, we were trying to take up smoking.
Oh, and that didn't work.
Failed miserably.
Turns out it's disgusting. No, but what were you trying to do?
Yeah, well, I went in there. I was very, very sus on the whole process. And I was like, okay, what can we try and do? And he was like, okay, we'll give you one. And the way we set this one up was to help you be more productive. It was hypnotism where anytime you see the color red, it helps you focus, right? So then you could set yourself up, you have a workstation, you see the color red, and you go for it. And he did that. I can't remember everything he was saying in there, but it was all around that topic. And then as soon as I came out of the hypnotism, I like saw the color red. And it was pretty nuts. Like I would say that it was a very strong impact for maybe 2 to 3 months after it. And then probably on my fault, I stopped doing like putting the red at my workspace. And I kind of after 4 or 5 months, I felt like I'd lost the effect of it. But for 2 or 3 months, it was like really strong. I could like put, I could like just shine a red light. What I did was I got a red card and I got a red light on my phone and I could shine that light, see it. And it was like instant focus or like instant, like stop procrastinating, which I thought was pretty powerful. So man, it 100% works. I think I fall into the genetic profile of people that are quite easily hypnotized because he said that I was like, just like straight under and probably more hypnotizable than other people. And I had trouble coming out of it.
Right.
Whereas like, yeah, some people like barely get into it. So yeah, man, if anyone's got anything out there, like smoking or biting their nails or any sort of like bad habit they'd love to get out. Now I think about it, I've got a few I could probably go back for. yeah, and I would encourage you to go find a person and get it done. Any of those people that do quit smoking hypnotism, they can usually do almost anything else as well.
Interesting. Yeah, so the one thing that I got out of the podcast, and it's actually just a really small section of the podcast, but it's something that I've been thinking about a long time, and it's nice, I guess, when science helps confirm what you kind of already have suspicions about or believe. And so in the case of the gyms and people that we hire, and this is also the case of just anyone, but I pay a particular attention to it with people that we hire, is where they were brought up and what kind of environment you were nurtured in. And this is kind of this whole nature nurture thing, but he goes to describe, and I'm pretty sure that he would agree by the sounds of what he said. He didn't explicitly mention it, but he said that where you kind of grow up or where you're nurtured kind of sets your internal cadence for, I guess, your, I guess the way your brain operates, and the easiest way that he kind of put it is there's like a seesaw, and on the seesaw you're like really neurotic on one side, you're like really wired, really type A, like really autonomic, really sympathetic, and then on the other side you're like very relaxed, very chilled, very parasympathetic kind of person. And he was saying that the people that grow up, or kind of, you know, implied that where you grow up kind of helps to set that cadence, that internal cadence. And he made the example of like people that are very neurotic. So he used the example of himself, you know, the scientific community, sort of these high functioning, extremely smart, very cognitive people that are like high profile scientists, very neurotic kind of people, right? Always thinking all the time, always problem solving, really good at, you know, studying and reading and that sort of stuff, versus like, you know, someone who grew up, you know, in Mexico surfing, obviously very different people. He said that, you know, when you find an environment that matches your internal cadence, so your internal cadence matches the external cadence of your environment, you're a lot more zen, or you're at a lot more at peace. And so he gave the example of like when people like him go to New York City, they feel like a sense of, fuck, I'm here. This is beautiful. Mm. This is awesome. And Joe was like, man, I've experienced that so many times with so many of my friends, like all my neurotic friends, all my super high frequency, high functioning friends, they all live in New York City and they all love it. And it's really interesting because I've always found that people that grow up in the country and move to the city, which is really common in Australia, a lot of people like from the rural areas move to the big metropolitan areas, always struggle with fatigue, and always struggle with like overwhelm and busyness. And I've never really put it down to anything except for the fact that like, oh, I just don't think, you know, you're just used to it. You just might need more time to get used to it. But it seems like it's almost like an internal cadence gets fixed from a certain age. And no matter how much you try to adjust to it, it's really hard to ever change it. And so someone that grows up at a really slow pace and moves to the city and tries really hard to adjust to it may, you know, get through it for some certain period of time, but it's never as good as when they go back to a slower paced community or environment. They're like, oh, finally, I love this. So like when I go, and you probably experience this as well, when you go on like a really relaxed chill holiday, like it's kind of nice because it's a bit of a break, but you could never see yourself living there. Like it's just, there's nothing to do. So bored. You're always on edge. You always want to do things and you feel really unproductive. And I get that there are definitely times where you're like, oh, this is awesome. It's nice to just take a break. But how many days in a row do you think you could lie on a beach in Fiji doing nothing, Raf?
Two.
Yeah. So, and some people could be like, I could live there forever. That's all I'd want to do, you know? So it's just like, that was really interesting when he kind of put internal cadence matching external environment and why when they don't line up, people are like agitated or stressed. I think it made a lot of sense. Yeah. And like, there's even two intense environments, right? Like when I go to Hong Kong, I'm like, fuck, this is like full on. It's like full on here. And it's good. Like I can manage it, but I could never live there, you know? I could probably live in some parts, but the really, really hectic parts are like pretty full on. But I do think because I visited countries like that, visited Asia, I mean, I've been to Asia in international travel way more times than any other continent in the world. I think I got used to that a lot more as a kid. So I'm like pretty comfortable in massive crowds of people. Whereas, yeah, for sure, some people that have never experienced that before, they go there and they freak out. Like they can't handle it for very long. So I thought that was super interesting. And I think a lot of people are nodding their heads listening to me say this, going, yeah, I can either know that for myself or other people that I know as well.
Yeah, once I went on a real train in India, like a train that like the regular Indian people get, poor Indian people. And that is, I'll probably never do it again, but something must happen in your development that makes you used to have that many bodies
totally,
around you.
Totally. It's what,
like
it's,
there were so many people on this train, people were on top of the train.
Yeah.
Cause they like couldn't fit in the train. So they were sitting on top of the train.
That is an experience. And you know, speaking on the brain stuff, like trying to, because one of the things that he talked about was obviously your ability to focus and absorb and retain information. And I don't know how you feel about this, but when it comes to reading, I've never really understood how people can, unless I'm reading like a story, so like an autobiography or like fiction, I can't read for long stretches. I can't really read much beyond an hour where it's useful and it's going in. I mean, you and I have been reading Jim Quick's book and He's like a brain training expert, a memory expert, and he thinks that, like, you know, you're not really useful beyond like sort of 20 minutes. So you should kind of go like 20, 25 minutes, take a short break, 20, 25 minutes to allow your brain to absorb and memorize the information. Because I've always thought that in the context of like reading business books and nonfiction and personal development stuff and stuff where you, every single sentence is important and valuable, it's like really hard to read for like 3 or 4 hours because you forget most of it. You end up, you know, you end up sitting down and going through, I don't know, in the example of the book I'm reading now, Ray Dalio's Principles, you could read 25 principles. And if you ask me to recall all 25, I'll probably recall one or two. And so I found it's actually a much better strategy at the moment is I'm just reading like 15, 20 minutes a day. And I'm just like trying to really, really hone in and memorize like whatever piece of information I'm reading in the book at the time and trying to bring it, rehash it and bring it up to myself during the day. Be like, all right, what was that thing that I read this morning? And that way I find it's a lot more sticky in the memory and it's a lot more useful because I don't get it. I don't know how people can stack up like 7 or 8 different books and go, all right, I'm going to smash through these this month. I go, there's no way, unless you're just a computer, there's no way you can memorize everything that's in that book. And they're all such good books. Like, you should probably take the lessons from those 7 to 8 books and spread it out over a year. You get way more out of it than if you just rush through it. So I don't know what that speaks to. I think that speaks to, obviously, there's vanity metrics, people wanting to, you know, read more books than everyone else. And I think I've spoken about this before. But yeah, I think it's just, I don't know, it's just a waste. It's just a waste of a good book to like not absorb it all.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's different strategies. I think one strategy that can work is that one where you go really hard and you take everything out of a book that you can. But then I think another way you can go is you do get through a lot of books and you get through 7 and then there's like one thing in one book and you're like, after all that, that's the best thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you like, so you like go really, really broad. You absorb very little, but it gives you the broadest perspective on what might be the thing you want to take out of it the most, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that strategy works if you put a lot of time into reading, but if you have less time into reading, you do want more of
everybody.
Yeah. Then you do want more of a sniper approach. And last thing I'll mention, fuck, this really pissed me off. I think a few weeks ago on the show, fucking gave Reebok the shout out, getting the new Nanos. Didn't even come. Didn't give me any reason. Just emailed me and said, hey, your order is canceled. And so I'm just apparently waiting for a refund. Look, Reebok, you suck. Like, you actually suck. This is retarded. It's Nike, Reebok, Adidas, Puma. Like, there are massive brands in the world. There are startup companies that are making shoes out of wool that can fulfill orders properly. You're Reebok and you can't fulfill orders properly with your new shoe. It's so stupid. They didn't even tell me why my order got canceled. It wasn't even like, hey, sorry, out of stock when you ordered. There was a bit of a mix up. I just got an email. Your order is canceled. No explanation. Not even like, oh, you will be refunded in 14 days. Nothing like that. And then here's the best part, right? And then I message them on Instagram. I'm like, I'm just totally passive, right? Completely docile. Hey, like, got my order canceled. All good. No stress, guys. I'm not concerned. Just want to know, is there an email I can contact to discuss the details? They see it. Like, it says, they have seen your message and they didn't get back to it. Reebok,
the ultimate modern day. Fuck you.
You are shit. You are so shit. And that is why, not only does a lot of your gear suck, but when you do create something, 1 in every 100 pieces that someone wants to buy, you screw their order up. It's stupid. And the other thing is, I asked some other people about it and they go, yeah, same thing happened to me. It took like a month for them to get their pair of Nanos. I was like, you know what? Fuck this company. I'm never buying from them again. I feel better now. I feel better now that,
well, at least
tens of thousands of people have heard my rant about Reebok. All right, well, let's talk about a good company. dude, I have to flush out the negativity with some positivity. Actually, this morning, I was running surprisingly low on what I think is probably the most important product for my immunity right now. And now being in the situation that I've had the coronavirus scare, I am definitely taking my immune health more seriously, like getting more sun, doing the cold showers. But I also realized that obviously the nutrition that I put into my body is super helpful. And then obviously reading through a bunch of the different products in the Activated Nutrients top up, it's almost like I can't safely finish the day if I haven't had it. And so if I haven't had it, I'll have it at night. or have it in the morning. It doesn't really matter when you have it. I think just getting all those vitamins and minerals are just so important. And I think it's important to mention that the activated nutrients top up is not synthetic vitamins and minerals. They're whole food vitamins and minerals. So different manufacturing process, better absorbability. And obviously has their pre and probiotics in there as well. So you're getting a massive range of good stuff, that nutrients that your body needs to function at a high level. And especially if you're a high performer, especially if you train a lot, you do a highly cognitive job under a lot of stress, you need these sort of nutrients to replenish your brain, to replenish the different stores that you deplete in your body. So activatednutrients.com, you can use the code OFFERMMP, that's one word, OFFERMMP, and you guys can get 20% off any of their products. Listen to questions.
Yeah, I've mixed it up. I don't know if you do it, but I do 1 teaspoon of the top up, which is the greens powder, and then 1 teaspoon of the power up, which is like the energized red powder.
Tastes good. Yeah, yeah. I've got heaps of power up left. Yeah. Macaroon, yeah. Ginseng. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, we got some good listener questions. Nick Atkinson. It's kind of a comment slash question, but it's worth going over. He listened to our last week's show. He's had the whoop for 7 months. He lost his job at the start of lockdown. And because of that, he was sleeping 9, 10, or even 12 hours a night. And after that, he had really low recovery. Recently, he's noticed that if he actually just sleeps around 7 hours, he feels better and he gets like more often green recovery on Whoop.
So I guess he's concerned that he seems to be sleeping more, but getting a worse recovery. That's
and then he's gone back to 7 hours on Whoop. That's 7 hours sleep, I presume he's saying. His recovery scores have got better. I don't have like a data on mine, but I've generally found like 7 hours, 11 minutes, something around that is like the perfect amount for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Just I like hit an that and point. I get the best scores.
Do you wait in bed? You're like 7 hours, 10, not getting up, 11, I'm up.
Not getting up.
No, I mean, we obviously mentioned, I think it's the third time mentioning it on the after show. But Brett Contreras posted about like sleep studies with... And yeah, we definitely questioned the methodology of the studies, and other people have messaged us in and said the same sort of thing, and I posted it on the daily email as well. But yeah, I think that sleep, generally, you're going to be optimized somewhere between 7 to 8 hours for most people. And yeah, going over it, I don't think is beneficial. I don't think more is necessarily better, unless you're in a sleep debt, unless you're like actually behind on sleep, or you're doing a ridiculous amount of training. Like you're basically like pro athlete level. I'm talking about like... at least 1.5 to 2 hour sessions a day minimum, and you're training at like 80 to 100% intensities, that is when you could really push into the like kind of 9-10 hours sleep. But outside of that, like, I don't think you really need more than 7-8 hours. If you know your body pretty well, and you know how you feel, and you know what your Whoop, some more objective data says as well, then you found the sweet spot. It's awesome. You know that getting more sleep is not a good thing. And that's like important information. That's just as important as knowing what not to do is also as important as knowing what to do. So you found some pretty valuable information that honestly you would have never got if you weren't using your product like the Whoop.
Yeah. I think the truth is as well is just you get paid off with sleep when you are just consistent. It's like, it's not something you just make up and get long hours of sleep and it works out. I think the most important thing is consistency of sleep. Different to like calories, where you can, you know, it's kind of the total calories you have in a week, which is the most important thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the total number of hours of sleep in a week that really matters. It's more around the consistency that you actually got it.
Yeah, well, interesting, because Andrew talked about, because they're doing some sleep studies at the moment in his lab. This is the guy we mentioned before, Andrew Huberman. They're using Whoop bands to like monitor the sleep and stuff, which is pretty interesting. So I think Whoop is really busy right now with helping out with the coronavirus pandemic. And I do think that kind of general, I guess, the casual users of Whoop or the recreational side of the business is definitely pump the brakes a little bit while they try and help solve this pandemic.
Well, I think since you got your exposure to COVID, I have been on high alert for myself getting COVID. So I've been checking my respiratory rate every single morning. One morning I had a dip. I was like, that's it. I got COVID. When I'm doomed.
What an next day bounce increase back. In the respiratory rate?
No, sorry. I had one day where I had a decrease.
No, that's good. A decrease is good.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, no.
Well, I'm even super more negative than normal.
What is your respiration rate?
I'll tell you. But it, the what I got from it was that you want a consistent, right? If you see an up, then you may have you may have COVID. Yeah.
If you,
15. I'm like 15 every day.
Okay. I'm like 14 every day. Yeah, they're saying that most people's breath rate, I think, like in untrained populations, is like 20 breaths.
Right.
And then like fitter people are down towards like the 10 breaths.
Wow.
And if you want to go, if you want to induce, so this is actually really interesting. I if you guys haven't watched it yet, the Explained series on Netflix, they had, they have this coronavirus episode. I think we reviewed the first episode, but anyway, watch second and the third episode. The second episode is all about the vaccine and how the vaccine works, which I would highly recommend. And why it's going to take 18 months. And it's one of the best explanations of the vaccine industry, if you want to put it that way, and how that whole thing works. But the other side of it was the third episode, I should say, was the kind of like the dealing with the stress of lockdown and kind of coping strategies. I think it was called How to Cope. You know, that's what the episode was called. And what I thought was really good is they explained how parasympathetic and sympathetic systems work and why people can't sleep and what it means when you're sympathetic and what hormones are released and all this sort of stuff. And I think it's very timely. But yeah, one of the things that they said was when you do change your breath rate to around 6 breaths per minute, so bring your respiratory rate down from, say, what ours is, you know, 14, 15, down to 6, which would obviously, you wouldn't do that naturally. You'd have to do it with conscious breathing. That is a great way to induce sort of parasympathetic activity. So very interesting that there's some good research showing up on that. Actually, before I we get to the next listener question, I actually did watch a, I don't know if you watch Four Corners, Raph, on ABC. It's like Four Corners, for people that know what it is, and I guess for people that don't, it's like a journal. I guess they pick a topic each week and they get their whole team of journalists to go and investigate it. And they had 5G as the cause of coronavirus as the main topic, or 5G as the topic, because obviously 5G is like coming under heaps of scrutiny right now, right? And so I guess they were giving some airtime to conspiracy theorists and some scientists and looking into the research and their ideas. And let me just summarize it for you now, because it would be a real shame for me to know that there are people as smart as the people that listen to this podcast that believe that 5G is unsafe or that it causes coronavirus. So I feel like with this platform, it's my duty to inform you. Ev, my partner, her sister, she worked in a lab in a university under one of the head research scientists for mobile technologies and its effects on humans and health. So like mobile technologies and health. So she worked as a PhD researcher in one of those labs for years. And so I talked with her about it all the time. I don't actually know this, but radiation from like mobile devices and like radios and stuff, it's actually one of the most well-researched areas of science in the whole world. It's like thousands and thousands of scientific topics, like way more than fucking meat and vegetables and shit like that, right? Like this is like one of the most...
Keto versus high carb. That's the most research.
Because they've been doing research on it for over 100 years, right? Basically, since the radios got invented, like power lines, everything, right? Because it's always been a concern for public health. So it's had just so much research done. Do you know there is not a single piece of data anywhere to show that mobile phone radiation or 4G, 5G, 3G, any of that stuff causes any harm to human health? Not a single shred of evidence over 100 years, thousands of papers. And that people listen to, like the only people they have in these conspiracy theory communities are like doctors that do these like crazy speeches and these crazy videos that have been like sued and lost their medical license for malpractice. Mm. And these are like the people that they're listening to. Anyway, so it's just completely ridiculous. But anyway, so I just wanted to clear up, 5G is like not harmful at all to your health. It's actually less harmful than 4G, has less penetration, but I don't know, the conspiracy theorists don't want to listen to that. And then the second component of it is that, you know, 5G causes coronavirus. They actually trace back where it comes from. It was put up by the Russians. So they end up getting into this show that obviously a really good way to dismantle countries from the is to do it from the inside out. And so what these what do they call them? They call them like state enemy states or something, or enemies of the state, which is just like, I guess, foreign governments that want to try and it's like foreign governments that are enemies of democratic governments, basically. That's how you can think about it. So like Russia, China, this sort of thing. So the modern strategy, so like the cyber, they had like obviously the head of cybersecurity in Australia and that sort of stuff talking about it. But basically they were talking about how like one of the most effective strategies that these companies, that these countries and governments are using now against democratic countries is they'll go and create this fake news, right? And so one of the Russian government agencies like made this fake information about 5G causing coronavirus and put out all this fake information and misinformation, and it's like really bad. But basically what happens is if it picks up enough momentum, and they're throwing bait like this out all the time, right? But sometimes a lot of it never gets taken. But this one got some momentum, obviously, just because people were looking for a reason to get upset. People locked down, they got all this time, you know, conspiracy theories, coronavirus, all this stuff. They're just looking for more reasons to get upset, right? Anyway, so they trace it back, and the guy was explaining how effective this stuff is, because he says what it does is it actually creates division in the country. It creates like people that use 5G and people that don't use 5G, and people actually and what they've actually studied with it is it does have detrimental effects on the economy, on that internal country's economy, because you divide the people. You get people that don't follow lockdown laws. They stop obeying the government. They don't wear masks. They light cell phone towers on fire. They attack workers that are like, you know, installing 5G. So they create massive disruption in the country, and as a result, it really, really weakens their economy. And they've got like heaps of examples of it, and it's kind of concerning for me, because, you know, I like to laugh off some conspiracy theories and stuff sometimes and just joke about it. But then when you realize what are that they're actual enemy governments like purposely doing this and doing it effectively, and it's working, and it's potentially crippling our economies, causing us to be in lockdown for longer, right? Causing the greatest spread of the virus, causing more businesses to go out, affecting my business, affecting the businesses of the people listening. You realize it's serious. It's really serious. Like, you can't believe this shit. This stuff is ridiculous. There's no evidence anywhere in any scientific papers, in the whole scientific body of research in this area, to prove any of this stuff. And it has real world consequences. And I think I didn't really take it seriously until I was watching that episode last night. And that's just why I felt obligated to speak about it here, because, you know, it seems like even for the people that don't believe it and think it's ridiculous and they just kind of let it go, it does actually have real economic impacts. And it isn't from, you know, doctors causing malpractice. They didn't start it. No, it starts from countries like Russia and China that are trying to cripple our economies so they can take advantage of us.
Do you think Russia started a conspiracy around vegan diets that they're good for you?
No, because I don't think it'll cripple our economy.
I guess not. Yeah, no. Cripple meat restaurants.
Anyway, what's the next question? That was a long.
So the real answer is that it's a conspiracy inside a conspiracy. It is. No, it is. Yeah. It's a conspiracy inside a conspiracy.
It is. Yeah, it is. Well, the real conspiracy, I guess it's not a conspiracy. Start that conspiracy. If it's like actually a proven factor. But anyway.
Well, at the moment, I think that sounds like a conspiracy.
What, that the Russians started it?
Yeah, like it's a conspiracy of a conspiracy.
No, the Russians did start it.
Yeah, but it's a true conspiracy.
Okay, I guess. Whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to round out the conversation we're having before. So, I was confused on that point with the respiration. University of Queensland in Australia and WHOOP did a study together. Oh, cool. And I'm actually going to watch. So, if you are... So, 20% of people, it can detect 2 days before you get any symptoms with the rise in respiration rates for 20% of people. 80% of people, on day 3 of symptoms, your WHOOP will show an increase in respiratory rate that's clear. But most people don't actually get tested for COVID-19 around day 7. So it's still much earlier than most people are getting tested if you're on day 3. Mm. So if you have a WHOOP, that's the one to look out for.
Interesting. Yeah, cool.
Mm, I did not know. Okay, next question. Dean Strawhan, why is almost every fitness professional story, quotations, "I used to be a hard gainer"? The effort required to achieve a lean muscular physique may be equally difficult, but do fat loss clients have a harder time maintaining a good body composition than weight gain clients? anecdotally, it seems that way to him, basically.
Yeah, it's a good question. It does seem like that. It seems like a lot of the best bodies in the world came from a skinny physique into a more muscular one. I think that they have the natural advantage of their body not holding a lot of body fat. So it's very easy for them to stay in shape year round. And all they really have to do is focus on increasing calories, which is a lot easier in some senses long term than it is to just restrict calories all the time. But it's going to be different case to case. But yeah, it does genuinely seem to be the case. And I think it's a lot to do with, it's just you're starting with the six pack, right? The six pack is kind of like the flagship piece of armor on the body that everyone goes for, or maybe the chest. But it's like you've already got that from day one. You didn't have to do anything to earn it. And it's just like, all right, just build from here. Versus like the guy that's starting out really fat, I guess he could have more muscle mass, but likely he's still got a lot more to do. He's got to lose all the body fat. So he's got to take all the body fat off. Whereas the other guy's starting with no body fat. He just has to build the muscle. Whereas the fat person has to lose the body fat and build the muscle. So they have like more work in theory.
Man, I 100% agree. Unless someone can show me a good example, nearly every bodybuilder I see was, hey, here's me when I was crazy skinny growing up. Like, that's the before and after journey. And you get athletes for sure that were fat growing up, or even fat like not very long before playing sport. Definitely athletes that get fat after sport. But that is the one that you tend to see. I also think part of it is just when you're young, people tend to have a harder time putting on muscle. And then when you're older, people have a harder time getting rid of fat. And obviously everyone starts their sporting journey when they're younger, is the way it is. But yeah, it tends to be that way. But what I will add is I think people also just obsess a little bit too much over like what they used to be. Mm. I don't think it doesn't make that much difference. Like for your goals now, you just get after them. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm glad you said that because yeah, I think if people are always looking for an excuse as to like why they don't always have the result that they don't, right? And it's like, oh, well, because I started as a fat guy, not as a skinny guy. I'm like, well, that's bullshit.
The protocol is the same.
Yeah. The body still changes. It doesn't matter where you start from. It's like where you finish up. So, and yeah, I know plenty of guys that have been overweight that have turned themselves into ridiculous bodies. Like it definitely can be done. It just, in your experience and from what our experiences have been, it just seems like more skinny guys start there, but doesn't mean fat guys can't do it either.
Yeah. The only one I would say, I do wonder, people sometimes I think make a too big a deal as well around the, you know, the theory of like fat cells, how you can shrink fat cells, but getting rid of fat cells can take like over 10 years. Like once you create new fat cells, they do. And I remember I had a friend that did get like really fat and then wanted to get shredded. And he's like really was concerned around, fuck, how many fat cells have I created? And I know I can like reduce the size of them, but it takes a very, very long time to get rid of fat cells. Fuck, I don't think that makes any difference. You can get fucking shredded really fast after getting fat.
Of course you can get shredded. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Man, just go to any prisoner of war camp. Like, they're not too worried about the fat cells that they'd created walking in there.
Yeah. I do think, though, that the habits that you create to be really fat are sometimes harder to break than potentially the habits that you're really skinny with, you know? Because I imagine, fat kids, they just fall in love with food. Like, skinny kids, they might like some food, but they're not addicted to food. They're more addicted to, like, running around, playing sport, you know, being active, moving around a lot, riding their bikes, skateboarding, all that sort of stuff. It's why they're so skinny, because they eat a little bit of food.
Well, not eating is not nearly as rewarding for the brain as eating.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, some kids, just like their parents, maybe can't afford a lot of food for them as well. Like, you know, a lot of these stories are people that didn't grow up super wealthy. So there's like not a massive amount of excess food to go around. They're not just being fed all the time. I mean, it used to be the case for a long time that wealth, you know, body fat signified wealth. And it kind of trended that way for a while. But obviously now food is so cheap and affordable that like obviously really poorer communities are unhealthy. But that's got a tie into it as well. Like just from a large data pool, you know, very, very poor people can't afford a lot of food and someone starts a bodybuilding journey, they're going to be starting pretty skinny. They're not going to be fat.
Yeah, that is one of the most amusing journeys of all time is that you used to be fat because you were rich and you could afford lots of food, and now you are fat because you are poorer and you can't afford a personal trainer and organic food.
Yeah, it's completely flipped. No, it's completely flipped. It's nuts. As Sam Harris put it best, like the iconic midlife crisis of a high-performing 45-year-old CEO now is to start a triathlon.
Oh, it's everyone. Yeah. It's everyone. Oh, you got an accounting job? Okay, cool. First thing you'll need is a $10,000 bike. So you can get into triathlon. Yeah. So you have something interesting to post on your Instagram. Because God knows you can't post about your accounting job.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, look, so you're going to... Welcome to your first day of trading stocks. I'll take you downstairs to the bike rack and I'll show you where your bike rack is and your helmet rack.
This is where you take your Lycra off. Like, why would I have Lycra? Oh, trust me. Within a few weeks, you'll have Lycra.
Yeah. You'll need this spandex. We're going to go try some more. It's guaranteed. It is guaranteed.
Fuck, something about accounting that just takes people to cycling. Okay. We're going to leave you guys alone for a little bit. We have a good Netflix documentary. This one is made, this will hopefully spike your interest. It is made by the same people that made Don't Fuck With Cats, which is definitely one of the better documentaries we have reviewed this year. And if you haven't watched that, go watch that. But this one is called Fear City, New York versus the Mafia. I was initially put off because it said true crime and one season, but don't fear. It is a documentary and it is only 3 episodes. And it is about 5 mafia families that basically controlled New York entirely through the 1970s and 80s until really where the show picks up. They're looking at the federal agents that are trying to take them down.
Mm. Yeah, I thought what was really good about this show is like generally the talk around mafia stuff that hasn't had a lot of explanation outside of like The Godfather and like, I don't know, GTA 5 or something. But I think when they broke it down into like the boss, the underboss, like the captains, the soldiers, that made a lot more sense. And then they gave you that kind of rough ideas, how many people would be involved with one kind of mafia syndicate, you know? And that was what I did not. I'm like, are there 10,000 guys in one mob? Are there 50 guys in one mob? Like, I don't actually know how this works. What do they control? What do they move? What do they sell? All that sort of stuff. So I think just out of pure interest for how they operate, kind of from the inside, because they operate like a business, right? They're essentially just an illegal business, so they have to run extremely well. I just thought it was, just really interesting to kind of get the breakdown of like the numbers and the people and the hierarchy. I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, this is the first time ever I've actually understood how the mafia works.
Mm. Yeah, and that seems...
And it was worth it just for that.
Yeah, because you kind of know that they go out and they kill people and they stab people and they shoot people and they... you know, fight with the cops and there's dirty cops. Like, yeah, I would get it, right? The Hollywood movies had to come from somewhere, right? So you kind of know all that stuff. So if it was going to be another one of those documentaries, I wouldn't be that interested. But yeah, how they kind of broke down the operations or the internal operations of a functioning mafia family was super interesting.
Yeah, and then they get into, you know, for the first time you watch it, you realize why it actually was really hard to take down a mafia. You know, with the existing laws in place, it was basically impossible to take down a mafia family because the bosses obviously never committed any crimes themselves.
Mm.
So as long as people are willing to just do crimes for you, you're basically untouchable. So I haven't finished the series, but I have enjoyed it from there. It doesn't, for me, hook you like in the same way that Don't Fuck With Cats hooks you.
Yeah.
Just because you're not on the edge of your seat behind it. But if you have any interest in this type of topic, which I do, then it's good.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5.
I'm going to sit with you on that. Is there anywhere where the mafia like still exists? I think it's only Italy.
Italy. Well, I mean, Japan obviously has the Yakuza. But I don't know. Yeah, for the Italian mafia, I'm not sure.
No, I saw a documentary. There's one somewhere on Netflix, which I've seen, which makes it out that the mafia in Italy is still like really powerful.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Not as crazy as the old days, but it's strong.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about how the Yakuza is integrated with the Japanese police and stuff, like they work, it's like yin and yang. They work together. They can't work one without the other. It's so deeply rooted, the roots. That's just like how it is. So that might be how it is in Italy as well. And it's not to say that it's... I mean, there are gangs and there's an underworld in every country, right? So I guess one that is... I don't know, I guess more organized and maybe run a little bit better in some things, less scrappy, and maybe less people die. Japan's a pretty safe place, right? So, yeah. And if the Yakuza is pretty big over there, maybe it is better for the underworld to work better with the government, if that's the thing.
Well, listen to this. In 2018, the mafia assets that were just seized or confiscated in Italy was 9 billion euros.
Oh my.
Just in 2018. Just.
I mean, sometimes they're too big to take down, right? They're just way too big.
Oh, my goodness.
How many employees?
That is so many Lamborghinis. I have no idea. I don't think they post their employees on a public company. So, yeah, they are. They seem very strong. I hope. Hopefully, COVID hasn't hit them too hard. Don't think they are eligible for government support, unfortunately. But... Don't worry. Yeah, maybe if we have some Italian listeners, they can let us know.
The fucking 13,000% profit margin has got them covered. All right, guys.
And everybody knows that, everyone knows that 30% of CrossFit gyms are funded by organized crime.
at least. The equipment definitely is. All right, guys. So, yes. As you know, we have the Project Programs. We are launching Project Body pretty soon. If you're still interested in joining Project Strong, of course, it's always open. You get a 7-day free trial, the MyMuscleProject.com/strong. If you're interested in getting a world-class strength training program to build up all the different lifts that you can be strong at. And then as well, we obviously have Project Body. This one I'm pretty pumped for. We've got a ton of people already in the waiting list. If you want to jump on the waiting list, mymuscleproject.com/body. And this is really kind of a hybrid strength/bodybuilding, body sculpting program, which really, I mean, this we spent a lot of time with the principles of science and hypertrophy, really nutting out all the small little details and fleshing them out in the app. So we're very excited to launch this program. It's going to go live in 2 weeks. So if you don't want to miss out, well, you won't miss out. But if you want to be the first to know, mymuscleproject.com/body. And of course, you get the 7-day free trial to start into it as well. Okay. And then last thing, guys, before we leave you, remember that if you are looking to program, if you are looking to receive programming, if you want an amazing piece of software to communicate with your clients remotely, TrueCoach is definitely your best option. Obviously, a lot of us struggle to make something that works really smooth. We struggle to communicate with our clients regularly, copy programs, build programs efficiently, attach videos, ditch the Excel sheets. You need to move over to TrueCoach. So head over to truecoach.co/MMP. And you guys will get a free trial, free 2-week trial. It was 30 days during coronavirus and the lockdown. It might have gone down to 2 weeks again. But then you get a percentage off your next month when you join. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.